Hi, my name is Esau.
Hi, Esau.
I want to thank the meeting out here for having me out, and I want to thank, it's an honor and a privilege to give back to ACA what's been so freely given to me, which is, in my opinion, my freedom in my life and my true self, which is the objective to be our own loving parent, right? So, I'm here to share my experience, strength, and hope. So bear with me for the experience. That's the hard, bumpy part. And there is some hope in there. There is some hope. Okay, so I'll start with my father. My father was born and raised in Mexico in a small village far, far away. He was kicked out at about 14, 16 years old. Went to live on his own. Was raised on the streets of TJ Okay, the experience part, right? I got to be honest. So he was raised in a whorehouse with alcoholics, drug addicts, and prostitution. So that's where my father learned how to be a man. Then he basically eventually moved to America, where he met my mother. My mother was raised in a family of about 13 siblings. So there was very little love in that family that was shared, I should say. It's pretty hard to give love in a family of 13. It was a farming community. She aspired to be a nun, so she became a nun at 15 years old, and did that for many years of her life. She remained in that community for several years, and for personal reasons had to leave. When she left the nunhood, she was quite naive to the world. When you're in the convent, you live a very spiritual life, which is beautiful, but you also don't get to experience life and all the things that come with it. So when she came out of the nunhood, she moved to America and met my father, which was the extreme backwards version of what she was. By the time she met my father, he was the typical biker, long-haired, hippie, drug-abusing, drug-dealing, alcoholic, womanizing, gangster man. And my mom somehow fell in love with that. So, needless to say, I have the best of both worlds in a way. I don't think that we were a planned family. So life was pretty rough. My father didn't learn too many good skills in TJ, in the mean streets of TJ, nor did he take those into the family with him. So he was never around. He drank, he used drugs all the time. He was obviously cheating on my mom. That kind of environment was present to me and my older brother, seeing women come and go in the presence of my mother. So that was some of the stuff that I had to witness growing up. He was never around, and when he was around, he was not a very good father. He was just, for lack of a better word, a sperm donor. He was just a man that came around when he was trying to deal with a hangover. He was very abusive to my mother. Never laid hands on her, but everything else. And that was another thing that we had to witness growing up. He never really held a job. He would more depend upon my mother if he carried the family. So my mother worked very hard. I'm very proud of her, I believe. Strong believer in women for that reason, because she was a very, very strong woman with two children and a man who was a terrible man at that time. Along with his behavior as a husband, his behavior as a father was not very supportive. He was he would beat my older brother. He would force him to do drugs, and we were kids. Forced us to drink alcohol just because it was funny. My father allowed that. In his drunken rages, he would express his anger I'm assuming from the lack of love that he received growing up. You know, I truly don't blame, but I do have to acknowledge, and that's my piece. That's the hope part at the end of this, by the way. But so most of my life, we ran away. We were like a three-ring circus family. My mother, myself, and my older brother, we were constantly moving from home to home, garage to garage, friend to friend, family member to family member, whomever would take us, because we were constantly running away from this man that would come in with a drunken rage with a gun through the house and start shooting the place up like a cowboy, like the Wild Wild West, and we would freak out. I mean, there were scenes when I was wearing my pajamas watching, you know, cartoons, eating cereal, and all of a sudden, you know, gun goes off, kids are being thrown into the backseat of a car, and you just never see home again. And that was my life for a long time, always moving, always moving, always moving, never really having a home. So we fled, and some family members allowed us in, and some family members were tired of seeing us knocking on their doors on rainy evenings, you know. So that became that aspect of my life. Unfortunately, my mom, not having any kind of recovery or support, continued to allow my father back into our lives, no matter how many times we ran away. And so that was sort of another version of what I experienced, was this message of, so this is really bad, but it's okay to let it back into your life. So, you know, we walk away from it, we leave it, and then we allow it back into our lives. So I got a really bad message from that. You know, bad behavior is okay. This back and forth thing. So we fled a lot. We fled a lot from our situations. Unfortunately, things didn't seem to get better. In the running from these experiences, you know, it took a toll on myself, it took a toll on my brother, it took a toll on my mother. So when my father wasn't around, my older brother inherited the part that in the book it talks about the flip side to the laundry list, and either you become the abuser or you become the abused. My brother became the abuser. He basically beat me every day, every evening. I'd get beat by my brother, and it was his way of letting out what he just didn't understand or have any tools to learn how to deal with, which was what he was getting beaten. He was witnessing this horrible experience. He never had a home. I was there with him, so that was his way of letting things out. I was the introvert. I couldn't hurt a fly, and I didn't want to. So I turned it inwards all my life, which was my way of dealing with things. And that also wasn't a healthy way to do it, because that led to a deep depression, a deep, deep, deep depression that led to a lot of really dark nights. There were suicide attempts throughout my life. I became a drug addict. I became an alcoholic. Suicide was like, was almost a weekly thing. It was an attempt at suicide, I should say. I just wanted to end the depression. I mean, the abuse at some points ended. But then, because the only thing I learned how to do was internalize it, it just continued in my head and in my heart, and I just couldn't get it out. I couldn't sleep. I had nowhere to go. I had night terrors. I still do sometimes. They've gone away since. But I couldn't sleep. So there was really nowhere to go. My mom, being a nun, was extremely religious, and so we got sort of like the fear of God beaten into us, you know what I mean? So here's this message, this contradicting message, that God is with us and he'll take care of us, but he never did. And that's the message that I got, was that God was going to be there for us. Get on your knees and pray, just have faith. Well, I had faith, and I lost it. I lost faith because he was never there. God never came knocking on my door, and he never rescued us, and he never took care of us. So that message got really mixed up as well, and I spent most of my life, until I walked into the rooms of ACA, cussing God, you know, I'd be walking around with fingers to the sky, because God for me was he just wasn't present in my life. So I was also taught that God can hear your thoughts and God's always inside you. So when my thoughts were of suicide and of self-hatred and of disliking myself, now I was against God, because God created you to love yourself and all of these other things that I was told. But the God of my understanding at that age, you know, it was just relentless, confusing. There was just nowhere to go. So needless to say, my teenage years were some of the worst. Isolation, yeah, I'm sure if you looked in the dictionary, you'd see my face. I remember getting my room and you getting duct tape. I had a garage. I turned into a room. I turned it into a cave and just hid in there and just duct taped every little bit of sunlight that could come in. And it was always dark, and I just lived my life in darkness, because that's what I felt inside. The way I eventually, I think God has played a role in my life, when I look back today, which I can, thankfully, I always remember never really agreeing with the concept of God, but always at some point still kind of praying to God, you know, kind of like, I know you're not there, but if you are, do something for me. And so, luckily enough, one of the ways that I got out the way I started heading towards the strength part of my story in my life is that there was always a part of me that knew, and this is the true self, this is what I refer to as my true self, the part of me that's always wanted to be free, the part of me that's always wanted to be alive, the part of me that survived this, the part of me that survived. There's a lot of things missing in this story because I'm trying not to go too deep into it, but there's a part of there. I survived this. I survived this horrible, horrible life. And that's the true self that's talked about in the Red Book. And that true self for me was always guiding me and always trying to keep me alive. And one of the ways that I tried, and I failed, but I tried, was by getting married at the age of 18. And I thought, you know, this is the way I can fix my life. I can get out of this horrible mess. I can be loved. Inherently, I knew I wanted to be loved. Inherently, whether I was conscious of it or not, this knew it needed something. And this knew that it needed love. And so I thought to myself, you know, I found a woman and I fell in love, I thought, and I got married at 18. And at 18, I thought I knew everything. And no one could tell me otherwise. Unfortunately, and it's uncanny how the program can definitely define just the program for me was like someone was reading my journal. You know, we become alcoholics or marry them, right? Well, my ex-wife was an alcoholic, and she also had a lot of characteristics that were similar to the background that I came from. She was very abusive. She was physically abusive. I mean, I'm a big guy. I don't touch women, but my ex-wife would lay hands on me, and I didn't do anything about it. So I would say we fought, but it wasn't a fight. It was just a guy getting hit by his wife. And I believed that was okay, because I didn't have a really high opinion of myself. I wanted to be loved so bad that I was okay with that. I was okay with the mental, the physical, the verbal abuse, the emotional, laying in the same bed with somebody and feeling like there's no one there. So that was my attempt at trying to live, was to be loved by someone. And obviously, I learned the lesson early on that if the relationship is bad, you go back. That's the message I learned from running away from Dad. All of a sudden, Dad's back. What happened to that? Well, okay, whatever. And then all of a sudden now, so when my wife is being bad to me, I could never understand why I couldn't go away. I could never understand why I couldn't just say, you're horrible. Why don't I have the power to leave you? I'm in America. I'm an American. I've got the freedom to walk out of the door. But there was an invisible shackle holding me down. Well, that invisible shackle was what I learned, was the message that I learned as a kid, which was you go back to abuse, because that's just what we do, and there's no good rational reason for it. But that's what I learned. I stayed in that marriage for 5 years until, like the book says, we hit a bottom and then we look for help, we reach out. The book is amazing in that respect, and I marvel at it daily. And I preach it to myself daily because it's just uncanny how it describes us as human beings and what it takes for us to get help. So I got divorced and I found myself in another relationship with a woman for 10 years. Unfortunately, that turned to be another alcoholic relationship that I couldn't get out of. And again, asking myself, why can't I get out of this relationship? Like, why am I unable to move forward out of these relationships that are no good, that I feel I don't feel like I'm being myself. There's inherently a part of me that's like, Esau, you're not being you. And I didn't even know who I was, to be honest with you. I really never even knew who I was. I never was myself because I was so busy running away. I didn't ever know who I was, but there was a part, there was a voice inside that was always saying, this ain't you. Keep going until you find it. And I'm like, well, I don't even know what it is, and I don't even know how to do this, and I don't even know where I'm going, and I don't even know who you are. And I was talking to myself in a room. I mean, not literally, but in my own head. So, but that message was always there. And that's, again, back to the concept of the true self. The part of us that we were supposed to be, the part of us that we always have been, but we were just sort of forced to forget, ignore. And so I created the false self that was the good husband, the false self that was the man that was willing to put up with whatever abuse and bullshit you had for me because I didn't know any better. Well, the book is absolutely on point when it talks about, I am in another 12-step program, and they say that desperation is a gift. And desperation truly is a gift, because it took enough suffering for me to get on my knees. You know, it took enough suffering in another relationship that was loveless, right? Again, here I am trying to find love. That's all I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to be loved. And it took enough not being loved, which I equate to suffering, for me to finally get down on my knees. And I got to tell you this much, I didn't believe in God. I'm 34. I've been in program probably about 2.5 years, and I didn't believe in God until I came into program, which was 2.5 years ago, and probably about a year into that. Well, enough suffering, I did get on my knees, and I did reach out, and which I call knocking on the doorstep of step one, which is admitted, you know what I mean, that I needed help. I didn't know where to find it, I didn't know where it was going to be, and I didn't know anything. I just knew that this life that I've had wasn't life. I wasn't living. We were the walking wounded, right? And I was the walking dead. So one thing led to another, and someone one day mentioned to me ACA and said, you got to try this. And I ignored it. I didn't know what it was. I've never in my life actually been into a 12-step meeting. I'd been to an NA 12-step meeting, a good friend of mine, very recovered, very clean, for a long time. I remember celebrating for him his recovery and his clean dates. I would go to his birthdays. I would give him a cake, 1 year clean, 2 years clean, 3 years clean, and I would feel that energy in there and that beautiful power in the room, the love in the room. And I remember just sitting there going, I wish there was a place like this for me. I wish there was and I really said this before I ever knew ACA existed. I wish there was a program like that that kind of was like for me, but I'm like, whatever. And so I went on, and eventually someone mentioned this thing about ACA, and I'm like, well, yeah, sure, whatever, I'll try it. We've all got a million things to do. Well, one day I decided to go. I decided to check out what this 12-step ACA thing was, and my first meeting was in Pasadena on a Friday night, and I walked in and heard the honesty of people sharing what I'm sharing right now, and I just couldn't believe it. Someone willingly admitting in front of a group of people abuse, you know, trauma. Experiences that I thought only I knew about. That I'm like, I thought that I was the only person that went through that kind of stuff. And I just, I really didn't know what to think. I sat in that room and I fell in love. I didn't know who you people were, but I didn't want to leave. I was like that cat that shows up at your front door that you can't get rid of. I was like, I don't know what's going on here, but I'm coming back here whether you like it or not. I'm coming back. And I don't want to say the word obsessed, but I was in love, you know, like in love with this concept that something connected right here. And I didn't care how it worked. I didn't care how you guys did it. I just knew I was coming back. So I continued to go to as many different meetings as I could find. And I travel a lot, so I was able to go to different meetings. And I just started mapping them out and going to meetings and just sharing with people and talking to people, and started feeling this freedom. It's funny because I one day found my home group. It's in a room called The Pit. It's in that church. And I remember showing up there. I don't know, it's funny because what I do for a living does not know the men I work with would never believe that this is me, but I showed up to The Pit in the parking lot with this little red book in my hand, and I walk up to this old man and say, am I in the right place? I lead men for a living. I'm in charge of a lot of men, and I tell a lot of men what to do for a living. And so for me to come out of my car and very nimbly go, excuse me, can you help me? Am I in the right place? And he said, and he just looked at me and laughed and chuckled, and he said, you're in the right place. And like, I will never forget that, because that was like the picture-perfect ACA introduction and perfect ACA response. Yeah, you're in the right place. That man became my sponsor and still is to this day. I love him very much. I was at his house earlier today before I went to the meeting, earlier at 3 o'clock. Anyway, when I started going to meetings, I call it, I came in crawling, you know what I mean? I really did come in battered and bruised. I came in like dehydrated and hungry. I didn't know what was what. I sat in the corner next to the door so I could run away as soon as, you know, because it was uncomfortable. It was just weird. It was the first time in my life I stepped out of isolation. Spent most of my life, like most of us, just kind of going to work, doing what we thought was the right thing and dealing with our family of origins and trying to make sense of it all. It was monumental that for the first time in my life, I actually reached out to society, to people like yourselves, where I didn't know anybody. That was weird. That was really, really weird and really, really hard for me to do. And that's why I sat next to the door. And it took me a long time, what I call thawing out. It took me a long time to thaw out, to begin to feel, to begin to identify, to begin to realize that I was just one of you guys. You guys weren't different than I was. And that's probably one of the most miraculous feelings, was is that I was one of you guys. I wasn't alone anymore. I was alone for most of my life in a room full of people. You guys had it all together, and I was the only weirdo in the room. I was the only one that felt isolated. I was the only one that couldn't talk. Even though I got away with communicating, you guys, I thought, oh man, I sound like an idiot. I don't know what I'm talking about. I hope these people don't realize that I don't know what I'm doing throughout my entire life. So to be able to go into a room and socialize and to just talk, I used to just stand there at the end of a meeting, just stand there and watch people talk to each other and say, one of these, I'd love to be able to be one of those people that can just talk to people. What helped? Going to meetings. The Pit for me is about half an hour to 45 minutes away, depending on traffic. And most people would say, why do you drive so far? Why don't you go to a closer meeting? And I said, no, I can't do it. I said, there's nothing that's ever going to get in the way between me and my recovery. Because before I found this place, I said to God once, I said, I'll do anything. I'll do anything for a glimpse of freedom. I just want to know what freedom is. I want to know what freedom of this depression is. Just let me know what it feels like before I die. Because, I mean, for 30 years, I didn't know what it was like to be me. And once I got a taste of it in ACA, and I was hearing people talk about it, and I was feeling it inside myself, there was nothing that was ever going to get in between myself and these rooms ever again. And that was, and that literally meant breaking the attachment to codependence, breaking the attachment to drugs and alcohol, negative excitement, understanding that I had all of those things, recognizing that I had all those things, recognizing that I wasn't people pleasing. God, anyway, sorry, I lost track of what I was saying. But what helped was picking up the phone. My sponsor calls it the 300-pound phone. I couldn't make a phone call for about 6 months. They said, just pick up the phone and go to a meeting. I said, that sounds easy. You try it. Call me. Why don't you call me, right? But it worked. And I became obsessed. I mean, in the beginning, I was like, man, I'm wasting your time. But what was so freely given to me is why I so freely give back. I couldn't believe that someone would want to spend an hour on the phone with me, to talk to me, to hear what I had to say. And not just that, but didn't hang up and call me a loser or a piece of, you know what, after I was done. And I just couldn't understand what it was. I just couldn't understand this thing that was happening. Someone was accepting me for who I was. And so was the room. So was everybody in the room. I was being hugged by people that didn't know me, but that said, keep coming back. And I didn't have to understand what was happening. I didn't have to, like, intellectually understand what was happening. Because in here, I was thawing out, I was healing, and that's what I felt for the first time in my life, was healing. I felt that thing that I had been looking for all my life, which was love. It's such a corny word for me, right? Love, right? But it's like, I love it. It really is true. I mean, to wrap it all up in one word, that's what it is. To realize that I was worth loving and that I was lovable. I did only what the program asks us to do. I made phone calls. I reached out when I really didn't want to. I did what the program suggests you do. I left bad relationships, as horrible as that felt. The fear of abandonment. Oh, God. If anybody here knows what that feels like. Gosh. But you know what? Walking through it, and here I am, is freedom. Freedom from all of that pain that comes with it. And all I ever did was just take suggestion, go to meetings, pick up the phone. I took commitments. Secretary, I opened up a meeting with my friend Robin. At about 6 months, we started our own meeting. I gave back. I didn't know what I was doing, but I just had to just take a red book and have people come, and we just talked. And that's all that we were doing, was talking and relating. Where I'm at today is completely committed to the program, willingly. It's my choice. No one's forcing me to, no one's shaming me into doing it, none of that stuff. I love the program. I love everybody in it, whether I know you or not, because you're me and I'm you. And if you felt the way I felt, then I want to make sure that you don't feel that way again. With your permission, of course, I'd like to help. I'm not here to codependently help anybody do it, but I'm here to volunteer my time if you call me. I take fellow travelers through the 12 steps. I've started sponsoring. And I wanted to say thank you. I wanted to take a moment to say thank you to anybody who does sponsor, who has sponsored, who's willing to sponsor, and who plans to sponsor, because without sponsoring, I couldn't have gotten to where I'm at today. And I needed that relationship with another man. And I never had a relationship with a man before ACA. Men were authority figures. Men were bad people. They treated my mom very badly, and I didn't like them, even though I was one of them. So in ACA, I found out how to have a relationship with men, a relationship with God. The three-letter word that I was so pissed off at, I lovingly get on my knees every morning and say thanks. I go to meetings and say just thanks. You know what I mean? I'm like, I can die a happy man. Complete. Today I'm on a journey of freedom. I'm on the journey to recognize my true self. The self that never got allowed to be. The self that was neglected and lost, right? Today I'm on the journey to identify with myself, to be myself. And the only reason why I'm able to do that is because I've been accepted, I've been allowed, I've been appreciated by all of you. All of my strength and recovery has come from the ACA program. It's really saved my life. Genuinely, honestly, from the bottom of my heart, saved my life. Because I was living. I mean, I had a heart that was beating, but I wasn't helping it. That was natural. But I was, just because I was living doesn't mean I was alive. Today I'm alive. Today I feel alive. Today I laugh from down here. Today I love from right here. I hug strangers. I love strangers. And I love this program. It saved my life. And I will be forever grateful for this program that I'm sure, like a lot of people say, is a godsend. But anyway, I just wanted to say thank you to ACA and thank you all for letting me share.